A ghost hunting vicar has lifted the lid on Wales haunted hotspots and claimed that the nation is the UK's most haunted. The Reverend Lionel Fenthorpe, a judo black belt, motorcycling ex-head teacher, has been tracking the paranormal mysteries for years. And as you know, he's a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM. Up next, the greatest storyteller ever born on Coast to Coast AM. Well, normally he's hiding behind the secret door, and I don't know who it is until we open the door and in he comes. But now he's freely one of our guests tonight, Lionel Fenthorpe, back on Coast to Coast AM. Lionel, how are you?
I'm absolutely fine, George, and it's wonderful to be back on Coast to Coast. I love those games we play with the secret door, but it's nice to be able to come out with my own ID.
Absolutely, and you know, I was talking to my webmaster, Lex, tonight, and he was saying, did you see the article from Wales on Sunday? And of course, I said, Lex, of course, it's my regular reading every week. And then I chuckled, and I said, what are you talking about? And he says, let me send it to you. And there's this great story about you. Tell me about that.
Well, we sometimes do some work where we're asked, as well as being researchers and a management consultant and a tutor and all the other jobs I manage to crowd into it 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I also do a lot of statistical work when clients ask for it. And they asked a while back if I would look at all the hauntings in Wales, and we researched a number of them and visited a number of them, and it really is a very mysterious place. And you know, when you and I in the past, George, have talked about the theories of when an honest witness comes up and reports something paranormal, there are these five basic theories as to what it might be, and it just seems that Wales and the Welsh people are conducive to reports of paranormal events. I think that there's a high degree of what we might call artistic sensitivity in the people. We have a great many Welsh musicians. We have a great many Welsh poets and writers. And we also have a great many Welsh mediums who are good, honest, psychic people. And so I think that's why we've got rather more reports from here in Wales than from some other parts of the world.
Let's give this little disclaimer to everybody listening, Lionel. If you're at home listening, in bed, lift your arm up. Don't let it dangle by the bed because something could be under your bed. Pull your sheets up very close to yourself and protect yourself. If you're driving a car or truck right now, make sure the doors are locked. Make sure nobody can get in. And if you happen to be walking around listening on your iPhone or on your Android phone to Coast right now, look around and make sure no one's following you. That's just my little disclaimer, Lionel. You never know with these ghost stories, huh?
Yeah. We've got to make sure that our listeners are safe because we're going to need them again tomorrow.
Yep. And the next day, the day after as
and
well.
The day after, yeah, into infinity. Well, would you like me to tell you one or two of the things that we did the research into, George?
Of course,
in the
yes.
Welsh stories.
Yes.
Well, not very far from Cardiff, where we ourselves live, there's a wonderful medieval castle called Caerphilly. It's the same name as the cheese, but the castle, I think, is even more interesting than the delicious Caerphilly cheeses. And its architecture began in a period of those big concentric castles which were associated with our King Edward I. And it's haunted. And the number of people who have claimed to have seen this strange green lady of Caerphilly Castle, it all goes back to a time when the castle was owned in the 13th century by Gilbert de Clare. He married a beautiful French princess who was Alice of Angoulême. And while he was away at the war, there were visits to the castle from a Welsh prince, very good-looking guy called Griffith the Fair. And the inevitable happened. The beautiful Lady Alice falls in love with Griffith, and they have an affair. Then Griffith, who was a man of character and conscience, confesses to a monk so that he could be absolved. But the monk was a nasty, creepy character, and instead of keeping the secret of the confessional, as every good priest does, he went and told Gilbert de Clare, hey, Princess Alice is having it away with Griffith. And when the news of the monk's betrayal reached Griffith, he caught him and hanged him.
Oh.
Meantime, Gilbert had sent Alice home in disgust back to Angoulême and sort of more or less, I don't ever see you again, get out. His men, Gilbert's men, then caught Griffith and hanged him as he had hanged the monk who'd betrayed him. And the ghost that's been seen in the castle so often is that of Lady Alice. When she got the news of her lover's death, when she heard that Gilbert's men had hanged him, she fell dead with shock in her castle at Angoulême.
Oh, my gosh.
Her ghost then came back to Caerphilly, and she's in this beautiful green dress. And I said the number of people who claim they've seen her on the battlements, looking out, almost in the hope that her beloved Griffith is coming back. And she seems to be waiting there till the end of time. And she's a very sad ghost, but one who is frequently seen. So that's the Caerphilly Castle story, which is one of my all-time favorites, because there's so many witnesses claim that they've seen her.
That's a classic.
It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, I recommend anyone visiting Wales on a holiday, do go to Caerphilly Castle and, you know, see what you can see. Then, a place we were investigating very recently, I'm doing a pilot for a new TV series of Fortean Mysteries with a production company headed by Matt Dillure. And we went up to the Skirrid Inn, which is near the Skirrid Mountain here in sort of mid-Wales. And I find this unbelievable, but it's absolutely true. That inn was an inn in 1190. They were pulling pints there 900 years ago.
Jeez.
And it does make you think, doesn't it? You know, you go down to the pub on the corner or your favourite bar, and it proudly says, established over 50 years. And then you think, well, they were drinking in the Skirrid 900 years ago.
They sure were.
And we spent Patricia and I, with the film company, spent the night there. And of course, they wanted us to have the haunted room, so we had this beautiful old four-poster bed. And I must confess, we both slept like logs, no problem at all. I have an idea that some self-respecting ghosts don't come near me because they know I'm an exorcist.
Is that where Rudolf Hess wanders?
That's the one, yes. That's the one where he is seen walking along the Skirrid Mountain Road in the direction of the inn. During the time that he was in the UK, you know, after he came down here, and there was all the mystery about why he'd come and what it was all about, and had he quarreled with Hitler, or was this some, you know, strange conspiracy? And he was imprisoned there in a very sort of light, open prison, because there was no way he could go other than wandering around on the mountains. And instead of having his exercise in the prison yard, he wandered about near the Skirrid. And there are those who've been ghost hunting near the Skirrid who have said that they've seen his shadowy form walking pensively along the mountain track. The other great attraction of the Skirrid is that it's probably the best cuisine in Wales. They have superb food and vintage wine and vintage ale. It's a lovely place to stay, even if you're not ghost hunting. And when we went down there, we had with us a very gifted and talented medium, Dave Matthews, who was part of the film crew and part of the shots we were taking. And There is one room, other than the haunted room in which Patricia and I spent the night, there's one room in the Skirrid which has got a particular atmosphere, and it was used way back in the Middle Ages as both a courthouse for trials and a prison. And someone could be condemned to death and could then be put into this little room waiting to be hanged in the morning. And it was also the sort of execution cell as well. Those ancient beams have marks where a rope has gone over them and down through them.
Oh, geez.
And they've even put a hangman's rope over there now. Not the one that was originally used, but a facsimile to show where the prisoners were executed. And you know the theory that you and I have discussed over the years, in which what we might call the stone tapes theory, where the fabric of a building can pick up human emotion and it can be sort of etched into the fabric so that a sensitive person coming into that area would get the recording to replay. And the stronger the emotion, the more powerful the emotional energy. Imagine how anybody was going to feel knowing that in just a few hours they're going to be hanged. And they're down in this little prison cell, which was part of the inn. And the feelings, their emotions of fear and sadness, apparently made a recording in the stonework of this cell. And as said, our friend Dave Matthews, who is a very talented medium and a very sensitive one, was able to pick up the feeling. And he said the atmosphere in here, Lionel, is terrible. There's, the suffering is lingering on in the stone. And I then performed, at Dave's request, I performed an exorcism and blessed whoever or whatever was trapped in there. And David said, the atmosphere's changed. He's gone. You freed him. And so we had a very, very interesting stay at the Skirrid. And for anyone, again, coming over for a holiday in Wales, you must not miss a visit to the Skirrid Inn, where Rudolf Hess's spirit walks the mountain road, and where the sad, troubled spirits of those who were executed there. There was even an association with Hanging Judge Jeffreys. He was supposed to have been there at one time. You know, the notorious Judge Jeffreys, who, if he'd been alive today, he'd have hanged you for a traffic offense.
That's all we need, right?
Yeah. And of course, another of our very famous Welsh mysteries that I investigated with my friend Bob Snow, who was at that time the secretary of the Ghost Club and a very good investigator in his own right. Bob and I had gone over to a haunted mansion with the rather difficult name of, well, difficult for me as an Englishman because it's a Welsh name, and it's Llancaiac Fawr. And in the Llancaiac Fawr mansion, there had been a family named Pritchard in the 17th century, in the days of good old Oliver Cromwell and the Civil War. And the family had this wonderful housekeeper named Sarah, who had been devoted to them, would do anything for them. And there was a short cut from the kitchen on the ground floor up to the family's dining room above. And it was connected by this spiral staircase, so that if the family asked one of the servants who were working at table, or asked Sarah, oh, can you get us this or that, or another piece of bread, or whatever they wanted, Sarah would move up and down that spiral staircase to serve the family that she loved. She was more like an aunt or a sister than a servant. She was really devoted to them, and they thought the world of her. Now, in those days, of course, if you wanted to be in polite society, there weren't many washing facilities and certainly didn't have anything like the showers and bathtubs that we've got.
Yeah.
So they used to douse themselves in very strong lavender perfume so that you smelt the perfume, not the person. And Sarah loved lavender water, and it was characteristic of her to always make sure that she was heavily scented with lavender perfume before she came to serve the family in the dining room. And Bob and I, who had gone to investigate, because there'd been a lot of reports about a psychic odor, a psychic perfume in the house, and especially from the area of this spiral staircase that Sarah had used. So Bob and I stood midway on the staircase, and you know what happens at a party if someone comes in the far side of a big room where the party's taking place, and he's either wearing very strong aftershave, or the lady has got a very strong perfume on. And you know, even though you're halfway across the floor, when they come in the door, you get a faint whiff of it. If they move towards your part of the room, it gets stronger. And then when they pass you, it gets fainter. It's just you know, everyday experience. We had that experience on that spiral staircase. I always remember Bob turning to me and raising his eyebrows and saying, "Hey, Lionel, can you smell that?" And I said, "Yeah, that's lavender." And it got stronger, as if somebody invisible was going past us on the staircase. And then it got fainter, as if she had reached the dining room above and done whatever errand the family had sent her on. So that's another very well worth a visit place for anyone taking a holiday in Wales. Llancaiac Fawr, the ancient manor house that once belonged to Colonel Pritchard and his family, and where their faithful housekeeper kind of still looks after them.
Oh, that's great. When we come back later after the break, I want you to tell us about Pembroke Dock and the search for a Nessie-style monster, Lionel. So what's been new with you and Patricia? Much traveling?
Well, yeah, we were down in Canterbury 2 days ago conducting a wedding for our friend Dave Chapman, who's a DJ, so you can guess the after proceedings were pretty good. And then I was up in Craiginos Castle, about 40 miles away from Cardiff, doing another wedding. And yesterday, the 7th of September, was our 54th anniversary. So we had a great celebration then with our daughters.
Can you believe we are into September already?
I can't. No, I can't. It where has this year gone, or where is it going? I get the feeling I've got to catch it by the tail and hold tight. Otherwise, it's going to disappear and be 2012. And 2012 we're looking forward to very much, because I sold my first story in 1952. So next year is my 60th anniversary as an author in print. And we got a big new book coming out to celebrate that 60th anniversary.
Well, you know, we'll be playing again. "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" in a few more months.
Fun. I love it when you play that. I'm very honored.
All right, you stay with us. Lionel Fanthorpe's websites will be linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the search for a Nessie-style monster swimming around out there in his neck of the woods. And also, we'll take some phone calls with Lionel. We haven't done that in a very long time with him. We'll give you an opportunity to chat with him, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to do a special health program for you, so get ready for that. And then Friday, of course, our open lines on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back in a moment, we'll take calls and more stories from Lionel Fanthorpe on Coast to Coast AM. What's the story of the monster swimming in Pembroke Dock?
Well, Pembroke Dock is over on the west side of Wales, where it opens out into the Irish Sea. And a while back, a number of good, honest witnesses, there's a pub along the front there, and just because they were in the pub doesn't mean that they weren't being good witnesses. And it was the barmaid who saw it first, because the way she was standing, customers had their backs to the water, but anyone serving behind the bar could see out across Pembroke Dock. There's an old Martello Tower there, and those Martello Towers were fortresses that were built 200 and more years ago when the Brits were half expecting an invasion from Napoleon. And so these sturdy old fortresses were built at intervals around the coast so that if Napoleon sent his fleet to invade, there would always be soldiers on hand to repel them. And this tower is something of a landmark against which the size of whatever was in the water could be judged. So the lady who was then serving behind the bar looked out and saw, just as with Nessie and all the reports of Nessie with the humps that rise up and down and the big snake-like head, there was something swimming along Pembroke Dock out towards the sea. Now, you imagine you're just standing at the bar waiting for your beer or your wine or your whiskey, and suddenly the barmaid freezes and looks over your shoulder out towards the sea and gasps, because everybody at the bar turned round to see what the lady was looking at. And this is why we had so many reliable witnesses who actually saw these humps, as they described them, moving along seaward at quite a speed, 4 or 5 miles an hour, a good brisk walking speed. And then, of course, two or three of them ran out to the front of the pub to get a closer look. And within space of 2 to 3 minutes, whatever it was had disappeared under the water and gone. So when we went over to make a BBC program about it, and, oh, excuse me one moment. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
A little bit of a cough. So when we went out to interview the witnesses and to make the BBC documentary about it, we hired a boat, or rather the BBC hired one for us, and we went all over the area where the witnesses had seen the monster. And there's water there. We got all the gadgets on board the boat, the sonar and the anything that will penetrate deep water. And it was about 60 feet deep, so there was plenty of room for whatever it was to have submerged and swum out to sea. Now, there's one huge question mark over this, which is that although the witnesses were all sensible, straightforward, honest people, their accounts broadly coincided that it was something in that water that looked very much like the traditional sightings from Loch Ness or the sightings from Lake Okinaga of the famous Ogopogo. And the Ministry of Defense also has some property down in that area where it is just possible. And you know, you yourself were very interested in conspiracy theory and what the government tells you and me as the man in the street and what they don't tell us. And so it is possible that it was a new type of miniature submarine that was surfacing and then going down again, surfacing and going down, giving the impression that it was a creature with humps that was moving along, but it was actually some kind of new secret marine craft. Now, if it was, that's pretty interesting, but the idea that it was an actual monster, an organic beastie of some sort, interests me far more. A government has to develop defenses and for the protection and for the good of its citizens. But I would be much more excited to think that one of Nessie's cousins was swimming around there, maybe in the mating season, trying to find her way up to Loch Ness. So that's the Pembroke Dock sea serpent.
All right, let's take some calls with you in the moments we have remaining here. Brownsville, Pennsylvania. Karina, you're on with Lionel Fanthorpe. Hi, Karina.
Oh, hi. Good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to relay to you two quick, pretty impressive ghost stories that previous Coast to Coast to Coast callers had called in on. First was a man who worked for a coal mine, and he saw the ghost of a previous coal mine owner who he just recognized from photos on a wall. He said the ghost asked him what year it was. That was pretty cool. And then the other story was a woman who went down to Machu Picchu. She had brought a gold ring with her, intending to put it between the cracks in a stone wall. So she went off and found a secluded space, and she did so. Right after she put the gold ring in the wall, she turned and she saw the ghost of an Indian, and they startled each other. And the ghost said, "Well, what's going on? Can you see me?" And right afterwards, the ghost walked between into the wall. So she said, "Well, if he can do it, I can do it too." And she followed him into the wall. She said she doesn't remember anything for several hours after that. The next thing she remembers is having dinner with her friends. So I thought those were two pretty impressive ghost stories I thought you might enjoy.
They certainly are. May I just make a quick comment there, George? That
sure, please.
Both of those accounts sound as if they may come into that category of paranormal phenomena, which when you and I have discussed those five categories in the past, could be glitches in time, where, you know, the J.W. Dunn book, The Serial Universe and An Experiment with Time, where he talks about time being wound around itself like a big ball of wool, and where two strands cross, if you followed them all the way around the ball, could well be 100 or 150 years. But at the point where they cross, you can look from the past to the present, or the in the other direction. And if you have someone like the ghost of the old mine owner seeing someone from our time and then asking what year it was, almost as though he was bewildered by the appearance of a 21st century man or woman, sounds as if he might really have been there in his time and somehow glimpsed through the time glitch into our time. And in that second fascinating story about Machu Picchu, again, it looks as if one of the original inhabitants had somehow glimpsed someone from our time. So rather than ghosts in the classical traditional sense, they might both have been, if not time travelers, then certainly time correspondents. And you know my own favorite time mystery, which again this reminds me of the old-fashioned public restroom. There was an old Victorian one in the city of Norwich. And a lady and her husband had parked the car right beside it where there were parking bays. He had gone down the steps because it was a very old-fashioned Victorian style of public restroom. And he didn't come back. 5 minutes passed, 10 minutes passed. Because it was a gentleman's restroom, his anxious wife can't go looking for him. A traffic warden comes along, and she begs him to go and see if her husband is okay, so he does. He comes back up the steps and says, "Madam, there's nobody down there. It's empty." Now she's really puzzled. 2 or 3 minutes later, the husband comes up the steps looking very bewildered, gets into the car and says, "I've just got to get my breath back and then I'll tell you what happened." So when he's recovered enough to explain to his wife, he says, "I went down to the restroom, came up the steps again afterwards, and you were not here. Our car was not here. But on the other side of the road, there were cars of a type I've never seen before, and they were moving silently as if they were electric rather than internal combustion engine, petrol and diesel." And he said, I just didn't know what to do. And he said, "I'd read about these time glitch adventures." And he thought, "Now, what have I read about it? My best bet will be to go back down, wait, and come up and see if it's corrected itself." And he said, that's what I did, and thank God you're here and I'm here and life's gone back to normal. Now, it does seem that these things happen, and they are really mystifying.
Did you ever come across any stories of time travel in your research?
Yeah, we researched particularly. You know, we've done one of our many books of unsolved mysteries, which are on our website. We did one on the secrets and mysteries of time. And one that we followed up and researched was where the two English school teachers, Miss Mobley and Miss Jourdain, had gone over to Versailles, just outside Paris, those beautiful gardens. And they'd gone there on holiday. And as they were walking, they got the strangest impression that, you know, when you and I go to a theater, the immediate scenery with the actors, suppose it was a theater in which the scene was set in somebody's dining room and the actors are talking over a meal.
Sure.
Well, the dining room table and the chairs and the knives and forks, they're all real. They're solid. They're three-dimensional. They're part of the props that they use in the play. But when you're sitting in the audience, you can see through the dining room window where the actors are doing the scene that involves the meal. And you know perfectly well that even though it's been nicely painted, the garden scene through that window is just painted on as a piece of backdrop. It's not a real garden with real trees and real flowers. Now, this is what Miss Mobley and Miss Jourdain found. They said that the scenery near them, the path beneath their feet and the railings and the little gateways and the plants, within touching distance, were quite definitely real and solid. But the scenery a few feet away from them looked more like a painted garden or a painted landscape than a real one. It looked like a two-dimensional surface, which was meant to represent a 3D reality. And they said that's sensational. Then they saw a woman sketching. And later on, when they'd got back to reality and got back to another part of France, they went to an art gallery. And they recognized the woman they'd seen as Queen Marie Antoinette, who had been, of course, one of the victims of the French Revolution of 1789. And they wrote this book up there. They wrote it simply called An Adventure. And I can commend it to anyone. It's a really exciting time travel story. And Patricia and I followed their path, as they had described it, through the gardens at Versailles. Now, we didn't see Marie Antoinette, and we didn't get the strange impression that the two ladies had had of the scenery being unreal. But it's a very strange place, and I think if you go there at the right time, and you're sensitive to these things, you may experience the same time adventure which they experienced.
Very good. Let's take Holly in Texas City, Texas. Go ahead, Holly.
Yes, I can't believe we have a 21st century version of Boris Karloff.
He's good.
Yes. Listen, if you do books, if you read these into books by tape, I will be a loyal customer.
Thank you. Well, they're on my website, and I'd love you to go there.
Oh, my gosh, it's just exhilarating. Well, thank you for taking my call. My question is, would you like to try an experiment sometime up at Kinder, you know, where the waterfall is up at Kinder in northern England?
Uh-huh.
Well, a dear friend of mine's remains were thrown down the waterfall at Kinder.
Right.
And his name is Stuart. So if you'd like to just call out when his remains were being thrown down by his ex-wife and his two daughters, it was a misty day and really dreary, dull. And when they got to the apex to throw the ashes down, all of a sudden the clouds parted and there was a double rainbow.
That's a wonderful experiment.
So his name is really Stuart, that's S-T-U-A-R-T.
Right.
And get back with us on that, and I'll send you an email.
Okay, I'd love to. Thank you. I'd love to hear about it. It makes me think, of course, with the idea of the power of a waterfall and the idea of a spirit being, that at Niagara, the Maid of the Mist, as she's called, was said to have been an Indian princess. And when the sunlight comes through all the water that fills the air or the mist around Niagara, but there are sensitive people who claim they've seen this beautiful smiling princess who was there. In the legend, she had married the god of the falls. She'd been a very wonderful, unselfish girl who had decided to sacrifice herself because her tribe's people were hungry, and she thought if she gave herself as a sacrifice, so she took her canoe over Niagara, but the god of the falls caught her, transformed her into a goddess, married her, and the two of them live there very happily in the spray around Niagara, and sensitive people claim they've seen her radiantly happy and beautiful.
Well, Lionel, my friend, we are out of time. I want to thank you for the great stories again. Let's talk a little before Christmas, okay?
Let's do that, George. I'd love to.
Lionel,
wish you all the best, and all our listeners and the rest of your team, God bless you all.
All right. He's one of a kind. I call him the greatest storyteller ever born. The first time I heard him, I said, I've got to get that guy on Coast to Coast. And there he is live in the United Kingdom, and he's working on his own television show, and he's got a number of books out there. He's just an all-round good person. I think he's one of the best. For Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.